I'm Matt.
Hey, I'm Steve.
Hey, I'm John.
This is the Sober Friends Podcast. We're here for the sober curious, the new guy, and the old timer. We're here to talk about the stuff anyone looking to live alcohol-free has to face day to day, and how we overcame those struggles. We speak for no 12-step group, but we do try to remain anonymous. You're not alone. This is the Sober Friends Podcast. Steve, I have a friend who reached out to me recently, and we were talking about this podcast. And he said to me, you know, I don't know if I'm doing enough in recovery, or was questioning that. And I have questioned that myself. And my immediate response was, are you sober? And he said, yes.
Yeah, right.
And my immediate response is, you're doing enough. But without ending the podcast now 54 seconds in,
right,
I think there's more to a topic than that. Because I have felt that way, and I am sure you listening feel that way. And if I were to poll people in an AA meeting, I would mention, probably 90% of people are going to say, well, I don't feel like I'm doing enough.
Yeah.
Unless you're going to 7 meetings a week, twice a day. So what does that look like? Can you identify with that feeling? Am I doing enough in recovery?
Oh, I definitely identify with it. And I think most people in our program of recovery would feel that way. And again, it's really a strange question, because our primary purpose is to keep ourselves sober. You know, we talk about a primary purpose, but it's to keep ourself sober, right? To make sure that we're doing everything we need to do to keep ourselves away from that first drink and all those things that come along with it. So when you ask that question to your friend, that's a good question. Are you sober? So on that level, yeah, you're doing enough, because you're keeping yourself sober. The flip side to that is that, again, in our program, in a 12-step program, part of that program is reaching out and helping others. So
yes,
that's where I think it comes into the fact that, am I doing enough on that part of my program, right? I'm doing enough to keep myself sober, because let's face it, I talk about it. I'm like, I have guys who, I have sponsees, that's what I call them, because they are, who I took through the steps. I spent probably a couple years with these guys who, for whatever reasons, they don't do meetings anymore. They are sober. They seem to be well-adjusted to their life. I don't have any questions about that. And I have no judgment about how much program they need, okay? So that's fine. But I know that I'm called to give back, because for my program, the big part of it was that I needed so much help, right? I needed so much help, and I had so much stuff to fix that I feel like it's a debt that I can only try to repay, right? Because this whole program has changed my life in ways that I would never have foreseen. So I feel like I always got to give back more. And that's why I think you'll get that thing like, hey, I don't feel like I'm doing enough, because that part of your program. Now, if somebody says, I'm not sure I'm doing enough, and because I'm not acting, you know, appropriately, then that's a whole nother story, right?
I don't think that's where he was coming
from.
Yeah,
I don't think so either. Probably.
I think it was a case of feeling less than.
Yeah.
I don't think it was I think it was being inferior. Well, and I think that's a common thing with people in recovery.
Right. And listen, it's like, again, part of our recovery, and again, I don't know how some of these other programs work, how, you know, some of these online stuff, some of these groups that we talk about, I don't know how they work, right? Maybe if you join one of these, you know, one of these podcasts or whatever it is, and you're paying $30 a month and you have this community, maybe you don't owe anything to anybody else. Maybe that's your gig, right? You just do it, you show up, you do your stuff, and you don't owe it. That's not how AA works, right?
No.
AA relies on sober alcoholics giving back to the community. So that's where we get in this. You know, we talked about it a little bit last week about maybe trying to find some new meetings and stuff like that. There's always an opportunity to give more. And there is a balance. We talk about, you know, that's the other thing. There's a balance. And sort of maybe that's the subtitle of this little this podcast is.
Oh, I hadn't thought about that. The balance.
Am I doing enough? And is this, you know, do I need to balance it? Like, do I need to figure something out? You know,
that's a really great way to phrase it. The balance piece. I kind of want to come back to that. Here's what is a big driver for me is I compare myself to other people. I will look at the crusty old timer who goes to 7 meetings a week and has 20 sponsees at any one time. Mm-hmm. And if I'm not doing that, am I doing it wrong? I'm not hosting a Joe and Charlie at my house. Am I doing it wrong? Should I be, what is the minimum amount of meetings I should be go to? And if I don't hit that number, I'm not doing recovery the right way. And I think that's where it comes from me is I'm comparing.
Yeah, I shouldn't say we all. I think some of us do that. And it's easy to look at these guys who have found a way in their life to really give a lot to the program. And it even talks about that in our literature, right? It says some of us will be able to devote a lot of time, you know, I'm paraphrasing, to this, and others will not be able to do that. So I look at some of the people who we both know can devote a lot of time. They're really, really, really called to service, right? And there's a lot of people out there, right? There's a lot of people out there called to service, right? We've talked about the GSR meetings and stuff like that. And I see, just for the little bit of time that I've been in there, the guys who seem to just move from one position to the next position, sometimes more and more responsibility, sometimes sort of a lateral move, whatever it might be. But they're called to service. Like part of their program is to serve in that capacity, and that's part of how they stay sober and give back. I easily can look at those guys and look at myself and go, oh man, I'm not doing shit. I'm not doing anything compared to these guys, right? It's easy to look at that, right? You hear Chip, right? You hear the old timers like Chip talk about, oh, he's been to 5 or 6 or whatever it's been, international conventions, right? He's been all over the place. He's, you know, he's been to these places where, you know, there's thousands of people in the crowd. Mm-hmm. So it's easy to look at people like that and go, man, I don't do any of that, right? I've been sober enough that I could have gone to one or two of those. There's one coming up in 2025. I've been talking about it. I've been thinking about going. I've mentioned to my wife. Will I go? I don't know. We'll find out if I'll go or not. So, it's something I'd be interested in taking a look at.
We've talked about Chip a bunch of times on this podcast, and maybe I'll have the balls to ask him on someday. But today I don't, because he can be a little crusty with certain things. But Chip is the old timer who is in his 70s, has been sober for decades, goes to 7 meetings a week, goes to the same meetings every single week. So he's got his Friday meeting, and he's got his he's this guy who's gone to a Tuesday meeting for 20 years and is not part of the group.
Right.
Because he never put his name in the group, and he doesn't go to the business meeting. So he's not part of the group, but he has gone to that meeting for 20-something years every single week. He's that guy. He's also a guy who doesn't have a family. He's mm-hmm. single. He doesn't have kids. He's retired. That is a tough comparison to say, well, you know, you're drunk every night. You should go to a meeting every night. Well, I also do have a family, and I have young kids, and I have a demanding job.
That makes
it more difficult to meet that high standard.
It absolutely does. It absolutely does. And I look around the table, and like I know, I go to fairly the same meetings. I branch out here and there, but I could look around, and there are a bunch of guys in this program who. And women, too. I shouldn't say just guys, but I know women, too, who don't have kids. And I don't know what mm-hmm. that is. I don't know what that says about alcoholics. But there seems to be, and I don't know, maybe it's just society again today. There are less people having, or are there more?
Well, I know a guy at the Monday meeting who makes up for that. I think he.
he was just over my house today, actually.
Yeah.
Stopped by to look at a couple windows. But I do think there's more people have not choosing not to have children, right? It's not mm-hmm. a totally new phenomenon, but so you do have those type of people. You have those people who no kids, whatever, and they have lots of time. Maybe they work a job. Maybe they're self-employed. And they seem to have that. But I will tell you this, that's not the only thing that makes them available, right? They really, again, they're drawn to do that. Because I know plenty of people who work jobs and do it, and they're still drawn to help other alcoholics. I know a guy who was on retreat with me. I know this guy, he works two jobs, like full-time jobs, pretty much. Yet he brought up three sponsees with him, right? And this is a guy who is out there, does a lot of work. And I'm talking about new sponsees. Like one guy was maybe just over a year. The other two guys had months, you know? He just believes in the program and he believes in giving back to the program. And they find a way to do that, you know?
God bless them. That's difficult for me. I am trying not to make this sound like excuses. There's a lot going on. Like just the volume. Last night was the last night of club volleyball. On Wednesday, which is club volleyball day, work starts at 8:30. I immediately leave at 5 to take them to volleyball. We're not home by 9.
All right.
That's a long ass day.
Yep.
So I'm getting some serious time back, both on the weekends and during the week, to some level. I mean, he's going to be playing volleyball, but that's all local.
Right.
That's during the week. That's local. A lot of them are, I don't live far from the high school.
Yep.
But there's stuff like that. I'm being pulled in 20 different directions. When that picks up, the girls will then be in soccer. And so last season, we purposely chose club times where the girls were practicing on the same night at the same time. And at the last minute, the town said, guess what? Girl one is on one field on this side of town. Girl two is on this field on the other side of town. Totally blew up our plan.
Yeah.
Made it more difficult than if we'd picked different times. But there's stuff going on. So then it becomes, I'm managing my calendar with a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, plus you have a wife who travels on occasion for work,
yes,
right? Which puts you at
she
home.
Does.
So you know, so those are just the things of life. And listen, I know I've been to enough meetings with you, right? We go to the Monday night meeting. We do this. I know that you're available to help people if somebody needs help, whether that's through a phone call or whether it's through sponsorship. If somebody were to ask you, I don't think there's any question that if somebody came up to you and said, "Hey, I'm looking for a sponsor. I like what you said. Would you be my?" I think you would do that, and
absolutely,
you would fit that person in, and you would find the time within your schedule to do that. So, so some of that is just opportunity, especially when you talked about sponsorship. We talked a little bit about that. I did a lot of that in the past and I seem to, have less opportunities to do it now and maybe less drive to do it now. And I'm not sure, like same thing. If somebody came up to me and said they wanted me to be their sponsor, I absolutely would consider it. Would get together with them, and if I thought we fit as a couple, if you would, and we thought I could help this person, absolutely, I would find the time. And that's what I've always told people. I'll find the time, because I sponsored two guys, like two new guys at one time, where you know I was meeting with them both once a week, one guy twice a week. Like I was having three meetings a week with just sponsees, taking them two steps and doing some stuff. So I'll always find that time, and might have to be early in the morning. One of them was very early in the morning because we were both early guys, and the other one was a little bit later. So we find the time, and I do think that part of this is comparing ourselves. And
oh yeah,
it's that whole thing of I think some of it is the guilt. Like we talk about it all the time. We both have gotten a lot out of this program, out of getting sober, out of the help we've gotten from this program, out of, our former partner, John, opening up his house to do Joe and Charlie's for years, going up there in those small groups. We get a lot of that kind of stuff. And I think we do. We look at it and go, well, I'm not doing that, right? I've never hosted anything at my house, and I haven't hosted anything at my house either. I've talked about it. I've sort of offered it. It's never happened. So it's easy to look back on that and think that somehow, because that's never happened, I'm failing. And that's unfair.
I also am always afraid that the people I put on a pedestal, which the old timers will tell you don't do that, is they're looking down on me. that they're going to point a finger at me and say, you're not doing enough. Those people who I do respect. And that is something that bothers me on the inside. Where if I go to a meeting I haven't been to in a while, I'll get the finger wag. And not the good natured ribbing of, you don't even belong here anymore because you're not doing enough.
Yeah.
And that goes through my head. And I have to say that out loud, because if I say it out loud, it's insane.
There are people who think like that, but I think they're few and far between. And
I avoid those people.
Yeah, well, I think, if you go, if you show up at a meeting that you haven't been to in a while and the meeting you used to go to, some of those people may be in that meeting. But for the most part, people are going to be happy to see you, right? That's just plain and simple. They're going to be happy to see you. And if you decide to come back to that meeting, they're going to be happy to see you. We may have talked about this, but I go to a Friday night men's meeting that has split from a meeting, and there was some bad feelings with that split. And 6 months ago or so, I decided I was going to go back to the other meeting. And I wasn't sure if I was going to be welcomed, right? Because I was one of the guys who got involved with this whole thing. And some of the guys at the other meeting made it clear that they weren't happy with me. But it was an AA meeting. And I went, I'm a little stubborn. And I'm like, if it's an AA meeting, then I could go show up. And the truth is, I walked in there, and the guys who I thought might be problematic, if you will, or happy to see me, came up to me, talked to me, glad to see you. So maybe I was just making a big something out of nothing, right? And I've been to that meeting a couple times since, and it's been nothing but good. And I wish I could go to it more, but it conflicts with my home group on my Friday night. But I do try to pop in there once in a while just to see the guys, and it's a bunch of guys I know, a bunch of guys I like, a bunch of guys who helped me a lot throughout my sobriety. I think we could all do, make a big deal out of something that's not a big deal.
There is, if you're not familiar with this, if you're brand new, a lot of meetings are started on the basis of a resentment. That is something stupid that happens that splits a group and they start a new meeting. So the silver lining on this particular meeting is now there are two AA meetings on either side of town at that time. And there are two meetings instead of one. Right. That's always a good thing.
And they're both really good meetings, right?
Yes.
And that's the whole thing. They're both really good meetings. And I've told people that. Like, I'll say, hey, we're in the same town. It's the same, almost the same exact meeting. And I've told people, hey, we're at this meeting. This is where we are. There's another meeting in town. And if you go to that meeting, you're going to like that meeting too. Like, I never, I'm not trying to sell my meeting. It's like, go where you want. Yeah, go what fits,
I used to have feelings around, this is a good meeting and this is a bad meeting. Meetings being good are all based on your perspective.
Yeah, absolutely.
What works for me may not work for you.
Yeah.
There are some meetings that I've heard of or seen that I haven't felt were the best, but for the most part, every meeting is good, and it's good for somebody. It may not be the thing for me, but it might be right for you.
I used to say that about the recovery club that's up by me. And I used to go there and go, I don't like that place. I used to always, I don't like it. It's not me. The client, the people they're going there, blah, blah, blah. It's too, people move around too much. Too much transient.
It has a perception.
People. Right.
For people in the audience, it has a perception of its low bottom.
Right. And I remember coming to that terms one day. I said, That's all about me.
Yes.
Because a lot of people love that place. A lot of people, that has gotten helped a lot of people get sober. A lot of people go to that place on a regular basis, and it works for them. So if it doesn't work for me, it's not a meeting problem. It's a me problem, right? It's like, that meeting doesn't work for me, but it works for other people. If a meeting doesn't work, then the meeting will die on its own, right?
Yep.
The people will stop going to it, and it'll die on its own. And that's why a lot of times I'll see the people like, we need support. And I get it, right? People, meetings do, and sometimes you go and ask for support, and sometimes you can bring the meeting back up. But there, I have been to some meetings where I'm like, yeah, I don't like this meeting. There's some structural things I don't like about it. For instance, there's a big book meeting that I went to for years. I went to it for literally a solid 2 years because I like to have a third meeting, and that was my third meeting for a while. And it's a big book meeting, and I already do a big book meeting. But what this group does is they read from the first page to the last page of the big book. And the thing I don't like about that is when you get to the stories, there's 39 stories.
Yep.
That means you're in the stories for 39 straight weeks. And I'm like, yeah, I don't like that. If I'm going to do a big book meeting, I want that 164, you know? I want the first part of that book.
I agree with you.
And that's fine. Like I said, there were people who liked that meeting, and they went there, and they supported that meeting, and that's fine. And I did it for a couple of years, and I took chairman. I made coffee. I did everything. But after a couple of years, I'm like, yeah, that meeting doesn't work for me, you know, because I don't like the structure of that meeting.
I will tell you, on top of anything, there's the structure things. I would say the biggest part are who goes.
Yeah.
If it is a good crowd and good sobriety, that can almost always overcome the format.
Oh, absolutely.
With the exception for me is I can't make a speaker meeting in my home group. I do. And it's a weird thing because in the podcast industry, like sober podcasting, a lot of this is about telling your story. And I've gone on other podcasts and told my story a bunch of times. I don't really like hearing other people's stories in a meeting because it sounds like it's the same thing over and over again. Or what could be the thing that's most off-putting to me is I hear your drunk-a-log and then you say, and then I got sober and that's the end.
Yeah,
that really makes me want to beat my head into the desk. And that's okay because there are some people who love that. Just because it's not my thing doesn't mean it's bad.
No. I agree. There's people who love speaker meetings. Not mine. Speaker meetings, no, they're great for me when I want to do a meeting. I just want to do something, and I don't want to work. That's why I put it like I don't want to have to think. I don't want to have to work. I know I'm going to go there. I know for whatever it is, a half an hour, 40 minutes, somebody's going to talk. Maybe they're going to open up some time for some questions, especially if it's not my meeting. I don't feel obligated to say anything. I could just go there and be part of that meeting and chill out. That's how I like my speaker meetings. I too wouldn't want to have one be a home group or even a regular meeting for me. I would just get tired of hearing, you know, speaker after speaker, you know, 4 or 5 times a month. Again, there's plenty of people who like that. It's just not my thing.
There's some people who don't like literature all the time.
Right.
I have to tell you, I am much more interested in literature meetings, even more than like a discussion meeting. Like a discussion meeting is great, but to me, it can devolve. You throw a topic out there, it ends up devolving into my problem. Mm-hmm. And so I like them better than speaker meetings, but I like the structure of a literature meeting. I know what to expect, and you almost have to discipline myself. Even I can talk about what's going on with me if it's necessary, but I have to discipline myself to try and share something about what's in that reading. How can I tie in my life to this reading? And for me, that takes some work, but I like that and I can learn something from that. And I say this around the different type of meetings because part of the work is empathy. And I have to empathize when I go to a place like a recovery club or Pathfinders, where I see people who live and look in a way that's not like me. They come from a different world, and it is a reminder that these people who have less than me are not any different. They just are in a different circumstance, but they have the same disease. It just so happens I have more, but I might have ended up in a sober house with nowhere else to live after that. If I drank long enough and this progressed long enough, I would be irresponsible enough to end up in a sober house thinking, where am I going to live after this? And that's the reality with some people. And fortunately, that's not mine.
Yeah, we're both fortunate in that. And, you know, I'm fortunate enough that I've been around long enough, and you've been around long enough too, but that I've been able to get to that point who, just like you said, I have not even empathy. Like, I go to a meeting and I'm able to go to that meeting and not compare circumstances to me. I'm able to go to a meeting, unless they start whining about their circumstances, then it gets, but I'm able to go to a meeting and listen to how they suffered from alcoholism and yes. How that impacted their life. And there is no question, no matter where you are, whether you have more money or less money than me, that when you start telling your story on how alcohol impacted your life, something in there is going to ring a bell for me, and I'm going to go, yep, I did that. Yep, I felt that way. So I'm able to do that today. And the other thing, like you said, listen, I had a sponsee who, just like me and you, was married, had a wife, a loving wife, had kids, had grandkids, who drank himself into a place where he had to go into a program and then go to a sober house. And he was in his 50s. And I mean, he had a house, he had a pool in his backyard, and he ended up at a place where, you know, he needed to go for 30 days, whatever it was, to get his shit together. Humbling, for sure.
Absolutely.
And I remember talking to him, right? We would talk about it, and he'd like, you know, these guys are half my age. Like, these are all the guys, the 20-year-olds or 30-year-olds coming out of rehab, coming out of this, like, and here this guy is, you know, mid-50s. In there. Listen, that's out there for me and you still today.
Mm-hmm.
It is. It's out there. I can drink that way. I mean, I can. I know I can. Hopefully I don't ever have to, but I know I can, which is why, you know, I make sure that I do what I need to do. I guess that's one of the other thing. It's good that I question, am I doing enough, right? That's mm-hmm. the other thing I might say. It's good that I have that question, because that's always challenging me to look at, are you doing enough? Do you need to do more? Do you need another meeting? Do you need to reach out more? Are people not asking me to be their sponsor because I'm not making myself appear that I want to sponsor? You know, like, it makes me question some of those things, you know?
Yes.
So it's always good to have that question and then do a little work on it and say, yeah, maybe I'm doing enough, or yeah, I can do a little bit more. But you're right. I'm sober today. I'm doing enough on that part of my life, which means that it's a good success for me.
I will say the question to ask yourself, and this is a great place to wrap things up for the podcast today. The question is not necessarily, am I doing enough? The question should be, how do I feel?
Right. Yeah.
And if I'm not feeling so good, that's the trigger for me of, I need to do something more. I recently started going to therapy again because I could tell my mental state was not in a great place. October of 2023 was a bad and very dark time for me. There was works, unfortunately, and maybe it's because I had that low moment that I was able to change things career-wise. And lo and behold, with that, I'm in a much better place. But I was in a bad place. I needed to go back to therapy. I wasn't in a good place. And if you are going downhill, doing enough means a lot of things. It could be more meetings. It could be more phone calls to people. It could be therapy. It could be going to see a medical professional and look to see, is medication something you need to do? There's a lot of things. If you are happy, healthy, and free, and a drink is the last thing, you're okay. That doesn't mean don't push yourself to do more. You know, you can always challenge yourself to do more. I don't think you have to kick your own ass if things are in a good place. And, you know, I'm in that place where I don't think about drinking to the point I feel grateful that I don't have that. When I see other people needing to drink, I feel grateful that I don't feel that way anymore. So that tells me I'm in a good place. It doesn't excuse me for doing more, but it's a different, healthier attitude of, I could do more, and that would make things even better. It could help somebody else. that makes the positive as opposed to beating myself up, making it a negative.
Matt, I think you hit the nail right on the head. If you're uncomfortable, if you're feeling like you may not doing enough, then it means you got to take a look at that, right? That's what you're saying. Mm-hmm. Like you gotta take a look at that and try to figure out what that means to you. Like, why do you feel that way, right? We talk about it all the time in this program that when we start feeling weird, we need to do some work. So that's a perfect way to wrap this up. If you do have those feelings out there, take a look at it. If you're in our 12-step program, talk to your sponsor, talk to some of your people, and try to figure out what's making you feel that way, what's making you feel inadequate in that part of your life. And is it just a transfer, mm-hmm. Is it being transferred from another place? But it's a really good way to sort of sum this up and let people know, like, yeah, there might be some work to be done.
Sure. And we'd love to hear from you. You always can email matt@soberfriendspod.com. There's a link right on our website, soberfriendspod.com, or @soberfriends on Instagram or Facebook. For whatever reason, more people have been piling into Facebook recently, and I do like nothing other than copy over everything that goes into Instagram onto Facebook. But for whatever reason, I'm getting notices that, hey, you've got more Facebook friends, which in many ways baffles me, but I guess it's a good problem. One of the best ways you can give us some feedback is right in Apple Podcasts by giving a review. Put a little headline, say what you like, give us 5 stars if you believe that we deserve it. That is a great way. We read all of this stuff. And Steve, we'll do it again next week.
Sounds good, Matt.
All right. And we will see you next week. Bye, everybody. You made it this far into the podcast. That tells me you're a pretty big fan. If you like what we do and you find value in the podcast, consider a donation at buymeacoffee.com/soberfriendspod. Your donation keeps us on the air to help out the new guy and helps us defray some of our costs. If you find value in our podcast, please consider a donation at buymeacoffee.com/soberfriendspod.